Hello, this is the Last Week in English podcast, summer semester 2019, week one. We're going to be taking a little look back at this week in English, and today I'm very lucky to be joined by some guests all the way from North Dakota. But I'll let them introduce themselves, tell you what they're doing here, and hopefully we're going to hear a little bit of a perspective all the way from the US, and hear some of their impressions of Germany. Okay, so if you'd like to introduce yourselves.
Hello, this is Eric Counts. I am a social studies teacher at Devils Lake, North Dakota, at Devils Lake High School. I primarily teach 11th graders and 12th graders in American High School. I teach American history and American government classes.
Drum roll, please. I am Tom Busha. I am from North Dakota as well and teach at Bismarck, the capital city, at Legacy High School to history students in grades 9 through 12. Also proud to be here at Last Week in English and hoping to shed some light on why such strange North Dakotans might visit your city here in Freiburg.
My name is Brooks Staflin. I am a social studies teacher in a town called Stanley, North Dakota. It is my 11th year as a teacher. I teach world history and economics, world history to 10th graders, economics to 12th graders. I'm also an activities or athletic director where I keep track of the sports. A privilege to be here. I've spent a wonderful week in Germany and look forward to share my experiences to my students.
Okay, thanks for the introduction, guys. First thing I want to ask you before we get going with your experiences this week is, you're here with Global Bridges. Why is it that you decided to come here?
I saw the opportunity, Mark, and I saw carpe diem, seize the day. This is a once-in-a-lifetime chance to meet German peoples, similar to many German peoples I teach with and teach to, and it was going to be an opportunity for me to come over here and orient myself in a place that I've never been, and try and find some people who are maybe like-minded or not like-minded, learn from them, maybe broaden their horizons through maybe some of my thinking, and get an opportunity to just simply experience life in a way I haven't before.
Okay, so it's the first time for you here in Germany then?
First time actually leaving America, other than Canada, which we don't really count because they're our ugly sister. So yes, first time out in Europe.
Okay, and what about for the other staff, Eric?
So this is my first time in Europe. I as well have been into Canada, but nobody counts that. So first time in Europe. Global Bridges is a German-based organization that has partnered with the North Dakota State Legislature several times over the last 20 years. And they create partnerships with German universities and education programs, and they invite American teachers to come to Germany and meet with educators and facilitators and really explore the city and get a taste of the German culture. So again, when that opportunity presented itself to us, there were several teachers that jumped at it, and we have a delegation of 13 that traveled with us for this trip. So that's a little bit about why we're here and what we're doing.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for that background info. And Brooks?
So for me, I was presented with the opportunity while I was in the middle of teaching. A principal came to the door and asked me if I would like to go to Germany. I thought he was joking, so after about 3 hours, he came back and asked me why I hadn't responded or considered it. For me, I've been to Europe before. I've been to Oslo, Norway. I've been to France. I've been to Venice, Italy, Bern, Switzerland, Rome. My family actually comes from Germany. That's where they originated from. Both sides of my family have been relatively close to this region. So selfishly for me, I wanted to learn a little bit more of where my family came from. I also wanted to learn about Germany. I want to know about peoples from around the world, because in rural North Dakota, we don't get a lot of opportunity to experience the world. And the more I travel, I feel the more I learn, and I'm eager to learn about myself as well as other people's. And what I've learned with my travels is we are a lot more similar than what a lot of people believe. And if you get out there and travel, you tend to learn that, again, we're in fact, we are more united than divided as a world. And so that's been a real positive experience for me.
Okay, great. That sounds great. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about those positive experiences then. Could you tell us a little bit about what you've been up to this week? Where have you been? Who have you seen?
Highlights, Mark. I don't know that the three of us probably have a multitude of different highlights over the trip. Where do we start with the food? All people got to eat. If we're similar peoples, the food has been amazing, from schnitzel to, give me some other examples here, guys, chime in. There's been multitude of things we've eaten. Tonight we had like a liver on a piece of toast with a tomato, and then we had bacon fat lard with an onion. What else?
Pretzels, potatoes, gravy, A lot of traditional dishes. I tend to be a food person, so I like to try different dishes, whether it's in my comfort zone or not. And it's also fun as a North Dakota native to learn that a lot of our dishes may have originated in Germany. Even though they have similarities, they are much different in some cases. So we kind of find out where that food originates. Just to kind of expand on Tom, we've met with heads of government, such as a mayor. We've met with teachers, along with your teacher, Mr. Jacobs, here. It's been a wonderful experience. We've met with heads of universities. We've met with students in high school.
So let me interrupt and say that I've been trying all week for you, for the German peoples, to try and pronounce the head of parliament, Rösler, and say his name correctly. It's taken me about 5 days. Probably you're laughing at me now for how I just said that. And Giedki, we went to the museum to see his home and where he lived. That was fantastic. We watched one of our 6'5 football players try to fit into a coal mining uniform this afternoon, which had plenty of antics. Him trying to get about a mine which he never should have been in to begin with has been fantastic as well.
So I think we've learned a lot about history. We've learned a lot about people. We've learned a lot about school systems and the struggles we both face as far as the German school system and the U.S. school system. We've learned that we both have frustrations. We've learned that we both have strengths. We both have weaknesses. We've learned about government, politics. We've learned about
student
views. We've learned about students and we've learned that sometimes students don't like teachers and have preconceived notions, and we've learned that students have favorite teachers, just like in the States. So for me personally, it's just been a very eye-opening learning experience. I think I've learned as much from the German people as they've learned from us. So it's been fabulous.
Hmm. Okay. And from all these people, I mean, how did you speak to them then? Obviously, I don't know if you speak German at all. But how did you find it communicating with people in Germany?
Could be difficult. Again, this is, you know, last week in English, so there are several listeners here that are picking up on English and trying to study that language. What we found is that the older generation was not as versed in English as the younger generation. You know, speaking to the students at the gymnasium, the teachers there, German students start learning English in the third grade. But as we go through and as we interact with people that are in their 30s and 40s and 50s, it was much harder for us to communicate with those people. And we're often trying to find somebody younger, or the people we're communicating with at the restaurant would find somebody younger that would then act as a translate for us. We had an amazing guy, Jürgen.
The man,
yeah. The myth, the legend. If you see a white umbrella, it's probably Jürgen telling you it's time to go.
When Jürgen talks, you don't.
Yeah, but he did an amazing job translating for us and helping bridge that gap. The university provided some great people that were fluent in English and able to help us bridge that gap. But sometimes you had to use technology. There were times where, you know, we're pulling out our phones and using the Google Translate and trying to, you know, mime or gesture or get our point across. This morning I needed a napkin at the bakery and nobody had a clue what to do. So I just had to like wipe my face with my hands, and she was like, ah, napkin, here you go. And she gave me a bunch. So, I mean, you do what you need to do, but it was definitely an eye-opening experience for me as you go through airport security and they're yelling at you in a different language. And as we're leaving America, the same thing's happening. We have, you know, non-English speakers boarding planes, and our TSA is just yelling and barking orders, and they don't know what that means. So it was a very eye-opening experience on how to communicate, effectively with people that do not speak your language.
I would add additionally that I'm very thankful for the multitude of Germans who do speak English. That I wish, one thing I will carry with me leaving is that I wish American schools would provide mandatory situations for kids to learn multiple languages rather than just come out with English. That I'm very thankful for the German people who are willing to communicate to me in my native language, and am wishing kids would have the opportunities to speak in other languages.
I would agree with both Eric and Tom that it's been difficult at times, but I think that somebody that spoke German and came to the United States would even have a harder time, because I find that all of the travels that I've taken throughout my life, that English is definitely a language that the world pushes. And I think that's one thing that we take for granted in the United States of America, is that the fact that we know English, and English seems to be the world-recognized language, a universal language, much more popular than other languages. And so I think at times our school system and our people get a little lazy. We expect people to know English, and we expect people from around the world to kind of cater to our needs. So it's kind of humbling and encouraging to go around the world to realize that we should expand our own educational system, like Tom said, and require some sort of language so we might get a better understanding of why people don't understand what we're saying. So it's humbling to have to use, you know, simple, like wipe your face with a napkin, hand gestures, and it can be frustrating at times, it can be embarrassing at times, but again, I think it's a very worthwhile experience to open our eyes.
Well, to touch on that, I got a few experiences. I have an Italian foreign exchange student back in Devil's Lake, and she speaks 9 different languages. But a lot of those languages are similar. A lot of them are based in Latin or based on a similarity within the language, and the English language really doesn't have that similarity in it. So it is harder for English students to learn another language, and usually the language that we learn is Spanish, because we are so close to Mexico and we do have such a Spanish-speaking population. Reminds me, earlier this week, we had a German kind of aggressively have an altercation with us and asked if we recognized our ignorance being in Germany and not speaking German and expecting other people to speak English. He might have had one too many Freiburger beers, but he was, you know, he raised a point that, you know, do we at least recognize that we don't speak the language? And to him, you know, it was, yes, we do recognize. The opportunity for us to come here was a short turnaround, so we didn't have 3 years to study German to then come and speak the language and be a part of the community. We had, some of us had 3 weeks to get ready for this trip. So, you know, just have to keep that in perspective as well as we travel the countryside.
Okay. I got a couple of questions, actually. I asked my students this week, do you have any questions for the podcast? They didn't know that you'd be on it. And one of the questions was about Fridays for Future. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's a protest against, basically against the fact that the students see the adults aren't doing enough about climate change. It was started by a Swedish teenager, and for these protests, students go out on Fridays and they demonstrate and they don't go to school. I don't know if you have that in the States, and how would you feel anyway about your students not going to class on Fridays and demonstrating for the future, let's say?
I think anyone who feels passionately about something should stand up for it. I think that students, whether they're 12 years old or whether they're 25 years old, if they feel passionately about something, they should stand up for it. So if it were my students, I would look at them and I would say something along the lines of, you need to do what you need to do and I need to do what I need to do. The school expects such things of you. However, if you feel passionately enough to accept the consequences for what this is, it will be more meaningful for you if you are willing to do that. You can't stand up for anything without experiencing some resistance. And so if you aren't willing to experience that resistance, you can't stand up for it. Same can be said for the phrase, if you don't stand for something, you stand for nothing, which I thoroughly believe in. And if you won't stand up against things in your life that you feel are wrong, whether it be something that Eric says or Brooke says or Mark says, I have to be willing to stand up for my belief system. The States have had similar things. We've had kids protest gun violence and gun control in the United States. We've had walkouts inside of my school for students. Some of these walkouts have been orchestrated by parents and by administration of the school to kind of coddle and take care of the student, where their responsibility or where their punishment, had they wanted to stand up for what they believe in, was absolved, where the kids didn't have to pay a price. And if you don't have to pay a little bit of a price, how can one say that they're earnestly sacrificing for something they believe in? I find those two things to come hand in hand. Nothing comes without a bit of sacrifice, whether it be a trip to Germany with a great delegation of people, meeting wonderful people like yourself, Mark, or whether it be standing up against something that I believe thoroughly is an injustice inside my society.
All right, okay. Well, so you would really support them then?
Absolutely, but I would penalize them if I had to.
Right.
Yes, absolutely. But I would high five them while I told them, while I slammed the door in their face, you know.
Being a future administrator, next year I actually will no longer be teaching. I will be a principal for our school. I think Tom, it makes a good point where it's definitely within your right, and it's very encouraged to speak your mind and to do what you feel is right, but also to understand that with great freedom also comes great responsibility, and also you do have to recognize the fact that sometimes you will have to face consequences for missing school. And just because you're getting punished doesn't mean necessarily somebody is against you. They have to keep the system, they have to keep things working and functioning, and you have to recognize the fact that if you break the rules, you're breaking the law, you will suffer consequences, but that doesn't devalue your movement. It like Tom says, at times it can actually increase the value of the movement, that you are willing to sacrifice something for another cause. But I also think it's important to not go to too far of extremes, because I feel that if you go too far extreme, either one way to the right or one way to the left, that can actually drive people away and hurt your cause. So I think it's important to communicate with your school, to show your need, sit down and have a good compromise where you can have it not quite both ways, but you can at least work with with the school to get support of that school in your protests.
Yeah, I definitely agree with everything these guys have said so far. And what comes to mind most recently, we've had several protest movements, from Me Too to Black Lives Matter to Colin Kaepernick and the NFL, American football kneeling during the national anthem, and protests after the election of President Donald Trump. We had the Women's March in Washington, D.C., and around North America, and is one of the largest marches in the past decade. But yeah, without sacrifice, it means nothing. If a kid is excused from class, then they're going to leave. If you give a kid that out, they're going to leave. When we were in the gymnasium, there was a flyer up for this movement, and the policy of the gymnasium was, we get out of school at 2 o'clock, you can join the movement then. If you skip school, you will be punished. Now, that's up to the student to decide how strong it is that they believe in the movement. Again, you know, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, you know, civil rights movement, you know, you had some extremes. Now, luckily, people that step out of class on Friday aren't going to get water hoses and aren't going to get German shepherds attacking them. But again, there is sacrifice that needs to be made for that movement to really mean something. The sad part is that the sacrifice that they're ultimately making is leaving education. We're going to fix this problem through education. We're going to fix this problem by being in science class and by being in English class and by being in professional writing classes so that they can become scientists and write a paper and make a presentation. And yeah, you might miss 20 minutes of class or 2 hours of school, but for all you know, that's the amount of time that you needed in order to really absorb the information that will help you make that change. So it's sad that the protest is during education, when education is what we need to fix the problem.
Okay, thanks a lot for all your views on that. Another question I had maybe was not such a serious question, but it's a serious enough topic, and that is cheating. I asked the question to students, have you got any questions for me that I could answer in this new podcast?
Student questions?
Student questions, yes.
That's what I like. Let's hear some.
And the question was, how do we cheat in the exam without you finding out? So maybe I can ask you this question. Is cheating a big problem in your schools, or plagiarism indeed? And of course, nowadays, with the internet, with all the information out there, how do you ask your students to do an assignment, and how do you check that they haven't plagiarized, basically?
Correct. Don't cheat.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that message.
No. Yeah. With the internet, it is so easy to get caught. All any teacher has to do is read what you wrote and go, that doesn't sound like you. We take a sentence, we drop it into Google, and it tells us exactly where you got it from. If we want to go a step further, we can use the software Turnitin. You submit the whole paper. The whole paper is analyzed, and it'll come back and tell me the percentage that was taken, and then it'll tell me where it was taken from. So, you know, just because you add some footnotes or add some citations randomly to your paper to fill it or make it look smart, you will get caught. I'm actually speaking from experience. I got caught cheating in college. I took a summer course, 6-week course, really fast. And I got in a pinch. I procrastinated. I went online. It was a history class. The teacher had a background in Ireland, and said the whole class, 6 weeks, was on Ireland, and I knew nothing about Ireland at the time. And at the end of the class, we had to have a 12-page term paper. And I panicked. I went online for $60. I bought a paper, and it looked legit, and it was, I got to tell them what the topic was, how many resources I needed, and I could even suggest resources. So I felt pretty confident. I got my paper 3 days later. I turned it in, thought I was nailing this. I even saw the professor at the chicken wing spot in town later that day, and it was like, thanks for the good quarter, for the summer quarter. I look forward to taking you again. We had pleasantries. And then literally the next day, I got an email from him, and I was busted. And at first, I thought, no, he doesn't got me, but he sent me the link. I clicked the link, and there was my paper, word for word, on some undocumented thing. And I fessed up, and that if you do cheat, and if you do get caught, you know, apologize, don't try to fight it. I let that website company keep my $60, even though they guaranteed I wouldn't get caught, because it was like, well, that was money down the drain. But I fessed up, and I, you know, just said, yep, I'm sorry, took the F, overwhelmed. Deeply apologetic. But that actually helped me, because later in my college career, I had another professor accuse me of cheating. And this time I did not. And I was able to use that experience of, owning up to it the first time. And even though I don't know officially, I'm pretty sure that the professor that caught me the first time went to bat for me and said, no, I caught him before. He fessed up. If he did it again, he's an idiot. And then when I met with the professor that accused me of it, the problem was I was using the 6th edition and she was using the 4th edition. So the page numbers for the citations weren't matching up and this and that.
Yeah.
And it was like, lady, you had me panic and all this for an error on your end because I used a different edition of the same book. Luckily, she no longer taught at that university after that year, or else it would have been awkward. But learn from your teachers and learn from your peers' mistakes. Don't cheat. Don't even try. It's not worth it. We're smarter than you for a reason, and we know how to use the internet.
Okay. Well, thanks for that honest answer there. We can always cut it out if you change your mind.
Get rid of it, Mark.
Yeah.
Get rid of it. Can it.
We're going to find it stateside. This is how you cheat.com.
Okay, we had a last question, another question from the students, and that was concerning types of English. One student complained that at school his teacher didn't accept his American accent. I don't know how you feel about that, because his teacher only taught British English. Is it an issue for you at all? Do you understand me okay when I talk to you? Is it... what do you think about that?
Well, I can speak from personal experience. We have an oil field in Stanley, North Dakota that's been discovered in the last 10 years, and we have a large number of Hispanic speaking students. When they're in your classroom, we do not distinguish, I guess, between whether you're American speaking or Spanish speaking. If you have an accent, it's more than welcome. It can make things difficult. It can make things awkward. It can make things, it can make you self-conscious at times. I can think of a situation that happened to me a couple weeks ago where students were asking why some teachers got angry when they spoke Spanish in the classroom versus some teachers welcomed it. I had to try to explain to those students that, humans have a tendency when somebody enters in a room, even if they're speaking your same language, if they all of a sudden laugh or if they all of a sudden say something that you don't understand, you automatically think it's the worst about you. So I had to have a conversation with those students where, although it's fine to speak Spanish in certain situations, when you get in the classroom with people that don't speak the language, it makes them feel really uncomfortable to hear that language because they don't know what you're saying. And again, it's a natural human instinct to think the worst. So as far as an accent goes, I can't speak to, in our school, not allowing that accent. For North Dakota, it tends to be something that's very unique, and at times it can be uncomfortable, but I certainly would never support bringing somebody down or punishing somebody just because their accent is different. However, there are some situations where you have to be conscious of who is around you and whether or not you should actually be speaking a foreign language that nobody else understands within the room. So we talk a lot about whether that's polite or impolite.
To comment further on that, though, one thing I've learned from this trip about laughter, I may not understand what you're saying, but I can reflect a lot upon if you laugh after you say something. And I at least can then, that's universal. We all understand laughter and sadness and different emotion. And so when somebody laughs, I can communicate and at least understand and begin to pick up on things in their culture that I maybe should or should not socially understand or socially how I should act or react based upon the laughter of that person. But I don't think, to answer your question in full, if it'd be like this. If I taught Spanish, Mark, and my kids didn't talk very well fluently in Spanish and we penalized them for that, that's something that might happen at a high level of university or something where you were expected in an advanced Spanish course or something like that. But otherwise, speaking fluently, or not even speaking fluently, but speaking partially will get you a long ways is one thing I've realized from communicating with a lot of the German people.
Right. Okay. Thank you. And you said that's one thing you've learned from this trip. So I guess my next question for all of you is, what are you taking back home with you? What is it that you've kind of experienced here or learned, and you can say, okay, I'm bringing that back home to North Dakota with me. Maybe it's a practical idea you had that you could use in the classroom, or maybe it's a way something is done here and you've seen and that's given you an idea about something you can do back at home. Or maybe it's not as specific as that, it's more that you've had an experience here and that's made you think a little bit differently.
One funny thing, one serious thing. First, what am I going to bring back? German toilet paper from our hotel.
Oh, three ply.
Yes, okay. Thank you.
It doesn't even exist in America.
No.
And you've perfected it with German engineering.
Correct. And it still flushes. Amazingly. Yeah. Yes, it doesn't get clogged. You know, and it does a fantastic job.
Is this the serious one or the
This is
one?
The funny one. Okay. To specify. I'm seriously packing some home. I got it in my... I had a group of kids do a podcast on toilet paper. And they thought there was some inequities between the class system with the teachers. We had two... They thought we had two-ply toilet paper and they had one-ply this was this gross social inequality between the teachers and the students. And
well,
so
hang on though.
Yeah,
Have you used the Mensa toilet paper?
Is Mensa how?
The Mensa is half ply.
It's a single ply.
The Mensa is half ply.
Which we apologize for in advance. Mark needs to do a better job advocating for better toilet paper.
Okay,
social protest for better toilet paper in the Mensa.
Yes.
We know you have it, Germany.
We believe in you. So... I intend to come to my students with this glorious teddy bear-like three-ply toilet paper and allow them to sample the toilet paper. And I know that sounds odd, but they literally did a podcast, as we're doing now, in which the kids talked about this inequity between the classes, and they tasted the toilet paper, oddly enough. Why one would taste the toilet paper? It was clean and sanitary. And so I intend to put these boys on the spot in my classroom and say, here's some German three-ply. Let's have a comparison here. Blind taste test here in this. So that's
a wafer.
That's one. It's more like a wafer, yes, absolutely. You know, that stuff barely bends in the wind. So that's one thing I intend to do, just because I enjoy having a little bit of fun. On a serious note, I intend to... talk about the wealth of experiences I've had, which would be a 45-minute explanation, so to save you from that. But the experiences I've had, not only with my colleagues and the people that I worked with here, and the experience of being a part of a group of people in which you know no one and you are walking or taking a step into somewhat the unknown, and then once you're in the unknown, you're fumbling away into another step, into another culture, and trying to learn about peoples and be opening and expecting it. And I would say it kind of like this: the world's kind of on the back of a penny now. You know, you can flip a penny, and there all of us are. And you can be anywhere within a matter of hours inside of our world. And so we're all so much closer than we think. We're all so much the same. We're all unique in our own little ways. But those unique things, those disagreements, those things are all about conversations, like we talked about sitting down and doing, sitting down and compromising and understanding. And I'm going to love sharing not only about the schnitzel, but about the about Buchenwald, about the mineral place we went to, about you, Mark, about our students at the gymnasium, so on and so forth.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you've got a lot to take back there.
I do.
I guess I'll go off on a different tangent. I learned a lot about different people and how united we are, but I learned a lot about caring. I learned a lot about the fact that there were teachers in North Dakota who I didn't know. That's changed my life, where I think we all have now a caring group that we're all very comfortable with. So we've learned about people within our own state. I've learned about people traveling. You know, you learn about different immigrant populations, or you learn about different language barriers. And so I care great dearly for those people that have that language barrier and cannot communicate, even though they're trying as best they can. I've learned about that teachers in Germany care about students just like teachers in America. I've learned about governments care about the same issues for their people. I've learned about students care about the same things within the classroom. I've learned a variety of things, but I think the word that I'll use when I come back is overall caring.
Hey, thanks.
I am smuggling 5 different varieties of paprika Pringles in my suitcase home. So Tom's got the toilet paper. I got the paprika Pringles, which was a request from one of my Netherlands foreign exchange students. I asked her what she missed most, and she just said paprika Pringles, assuming that there was just one type on the shelf. And then I walked into the supermarket here right by the college, the big giant one where you can buy everything, and they had 6 different types of paprika Pringles on that shelf. So that's what I'm taking home, literally. But the big thing I want to take home and share with my students is the opportunities in Europe. You know, the education system is accessible unlike any other place in America. The fact that an American student could come over and do a year to a year and a half of remedial German learning and then enter a public university system for very minimal costs compared to what they're going to pay in America, and get a high quality education and then have the ability to experience Europe all at the same time, that is unfathomable. And the amount of money, because our students panic when we start talking about student loans and financial debt and the fact that they're going to pay $20,000 or more per year, and they're going to go to school for 4 to 5 to maybe even 6 years to get that bachelor's degree. And then if they want an advanced degree, then they're almost 30 years old with $100,000 in student loan debt. That is a crippling nightmare for some of our students. And if we can say, look, your most expensive part of going to Europe is going to be the plane ticket over there. And then you can use the train and get a job and use the education system and really benefit. So that's what I'll be bringing back to my students, since I do teach juniors and seniors that need to be thinking about their next step.
Hashtag TUBAF, hashtag Freiburg University, hashtag you rock.
Yeah.
Exactly. Send them over. Send them over. That's all I can say. Okay. Well, it's been great talking to you guys, but I think we're going to have to call it a day at some point, because you've got a plane to catch tomorrow morning, early in the morning. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Train or plane. So, yeah, I want to say thanks a lot, Eric, Tom, Brooks. It's been great talking to you. I want to thank you for your honesty and openness, and also, yeah, I spoke to you a couple of days ago on Thursday when you visited the Language Center, and that was very good for me. You're not just taking something back, but you've brought something to Germany, to me and to all the people you've met. So I want to thank you on behalf of all the people you've met, all the people you've interacted with, and all I can say is have a good trip home, and be great to see you again at some point, either here or over there. So thanks a lot, and thanks a lot to you students for listening to this podcast, and I don't know if we can top this next week.
See us for episode 2 without us, but Mark solo, a week or so down the road as these podcasts continue to come at you.
Okay. Good pressure, Mark. Round of applause from the gallery.
All right, thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. I think we nailed it.
Wow, okay. So, yeah.
Can you turn that off?
I can. Yeah,
good job, man.
Chop that.
Yeah.